Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
1-1 pitch. Fastball pulled and passed. Alvarez in toward the corner.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball at cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Adam, Scott, Heath, and Chris.
Welcome in. It is a brand new week right here on Fantasy Baseball Today. I am Chris Welsh. That over there, that is Scott White. And we are here for you as we move through further into the fantasy playoffs. Maybe you made it through. Maybe you are a crazy person and you're just starting it up. I don't know how you guys fully all roll here. But Mr. Scott White, how was your weekend? And are you advancing in your playoffs?
I think so. I think I'm advancing. Well, they're two-week scoring periods in my head-to-head points league.
Oh,
so those aren't done yet.
You're one of those, huh?
One of those. Yeah, I just kind of like to, you know,
a little hedging.
Reduce the element of luck there. I think
I'm a big fan of the element of luck, as is baseball. And that's what I love about it. Perfect example of that would be, though, is this week in probably my two most important leagues, I was first place in one, and I just barely took down the eighth place. I'm going to move on, and I need to win this league because I have an incredible roster. The other league, I squeaked in an eighth place, and I just took down first place. Now, if you would have given me a whole nother week, things might have possibly changed. But, you know, the luck gods were on my side. Maybe you could say I played the right superstitious cards correctly and I was able to move forward. So I think it worked in my favor. I'm very happy about this.
You say so does baseball. And yes, that's a part of it. I mean, there can be upsets in a 2-day scoring period, too. It just, you know, it just weeds out the total flukes.
No, you're right. I was picking at you a little
there's
bit.
There's no 7-game series during the regular season.
No, you're right. And I was picking at you a little bit with the 2-week thing. That's more of a roto comment. What I did was more at the roto people with the, you know.
The roto people.
Yeah, you know. Like,
you roto people are all the same.
Yeah, you know, there's a little thing with the roto people. But all right, so we're going to be moving on. We're both going to be in a positive state this week as we talk because we'll be vying for potential championships is what I'm getting at.
I am vying for a championship, I believe, in 4 of my 10 traditional fantasy leagues. I also have a scoresheet league, so I guess And then Diamond Mine League, a Sim League.
Boy.
So that's 12. So I guess 5 of the 12, I'm still vying for a championship.
Okay. So that's pretty solid. So we'll have firsthand knowledge here as we are going at that. The only thing you could hope, as all of you, if you were able to get in early, you were able to maybe still make the move. Maybe one of the most important things, at least it went down on Sunday, it is coming down this week as we jump right into everything for you to win your leagues this week. Jesus is coming. Jesus Luzardo is officially being called up on Monday. His last start was in a PCL playoff game where he went 5 2/3 innings, 7 hits, 2 walks, 7 strikeouts, got up to 91 pitches on the minor league season, 43 innings with 53 strikeouts and a 2.5 ERA. Mr. Jesus Luzardo is coming up to the A's today as you're listening to this on Monday. Where are we at, Scott? Where's our trust level with Jesus Luzardo?
So if I'll go ahead and sum it up at the beginning and then I'll give you the long spiel. So sum it up from the beginning. I think if there's any pitcher you'd be adding this late in the year that isn't a 2-start streamer, it should be Luzardo, if only to keep him from falling into the wrong hands. Now, the reason it's kind of a muted enthusiasm there is because they have a 6-man rotation already. We don't know what role he's going to fill. The fact they were keeping him at AAA until that team was eliminated from the AAA playoffs tells me that they're not that invested in Luzardo helping the major league club this year. Because who cares about what happens in the AAA playoffs when your major league club is trying to get a wild card spot, right? So I'm not confident. Other than maybe, you know, if they get in really good standing and it's pretty obvious they're going to make the playoffs, maybe they give him a spot start down the stretch. But I feel like it's more going to be a multi-inning reliever, kind of
like,
you know, get your feet wet situation.
Like an AJ Puck or where Dustin May is at right now?
Yeah, kind of like that. But I think he's better than Puck. I don't think there's a minor league pitcher who could get called up who would excite me more than Luzardo if he was starting. Now, it seemed like Susan Slusser and Martin Gallegos, I think his name is. That's the MLB.com writer. And Susan Slusser, I think, is with the San Francisco Chronicle. I better get it right because I think she's mad at me. I mentioned that she seemed to suggest in her article that they were going to use him out of the bullpen. And she corrected me on Twitter that that's not what she said. So,
and I see Martin also, they kind of indicate that there isn't a clear idea if he's going to go into the rotation or not.
Yeah.
But my assumption is that we're going to at least see, I want to say, two starts out of Lizardo, but I mean, I might be off base, and you know, you kind of set the stage, and they've kind of also set the stage for what they've been doing with a guy like AJ Puck. I just felt like the trajectory of what they were doing with Lizardo was different than Puck, that they want him in not just a multi-inning role, but like a 5-6 inning type of a role. And he's not, as we talked about last week, he's not up against a cap as far as innings go. So you can make him go. He went 91 innings or 91 pitches in the PCL start, which was just under six innings. So they kind of have free reign with him. They don't need to, they don't need to baby him.
And I saw a lot of A's fans suggesting that maybe he'll take Brett Anderson's turn Wednesday because Anderson was bad in his last start. Anderson's been pretty stable all season. I don't know. It's all a guessing game. So it's more of a defensive play. I think it's a worthwhile one if you have the spot to work with.
And you got to make the play today. Like if the play hasn't already been made for you, to your point, without the knowledge, you have to make the play right now on Monday, because more likely than not, he's not going to be sitting out there.
And I should clarify that, you know, I don't need people going after her with tweets. Like, Susan Slusser doesn't know me from Adam. I don't think she's seriously mad at me. I was just kidding about that. But yeah, she's with the San Francisco Chronicle.
We got a tweet, I got a tweet from someone named Sean, and it was in regards to Jesus Lizardo, because I was, you know, tweeting a lot on Sunday with football and baseball going on, and I was very excited to see when Lizardo was called up. And Sean had an interesting tweet, and I wanted to bring it here. He said, would you start Lizardo? Would you pick him up? And I'm assuming this is weekly. He didn't actually say, but I'm assuming by the question, he said, would you take Lizardo over a two-start Logan Webb, 12-team, 6x6 categories, first week of the playoffs? Because you made the preface of like any single pitcher you want Lizardo, but we didn't go deep into the two starts. So a guy like Logan Webb versus Lizardo.
I made the exception for two-start sleepers, but here's the funny thing. Logan Webb isn't a two-start pitcher anymore. You know who's the two-start pitcher for the Giants now?
Tyler Beede?
Johnny Q.
Johnny
Cueto.
We were talking, before we started up, we were talking about just the sheet, and Scott was like, yeah, good old Johnny Q. And then you're like, I don't actually know why I called him that. But we arkened it back to like an old good time where we're like, oh yeah, good old Johnny Q in the 1950s.
Yeah, Johnny Cueto, though, he's back from Tommy John surgery and scheduled to go Tuesday. Remember, he was scheduled to go, I think it was over the weekend, but he had a back issue that pushed it back.
He was
always get back again. I don't know that Logan Webb's making a single start this week. Now, it's possible Cueto's just replacing him in the rotation. And look, it's obviously a huge risk to start Cueto coming back from Tommy John surgery. His last rehab start in the PCL, where nobody pitches well, was great. Six shutout innings. Obviously, he has a track record. And I was excited about Webb on Friday, mostly because of the matchups going against.
Yeah, even though he got rocked in his last one.
Marlins. So, it may be a case where Cueto just replaces Webb as the preferred two-star sleeper this week.
Let me ask you then, because the most viewed players that we were checking in on the show here over on CBS was your boy Johnny Q, Johnny Cueto with a C, who's got that start Tuesday against Pittsburgh. We're 13 months removed from Tommy John. His last outing, if you want to get an idea of like maybe where he's at, he went about 75 pitches. So he'd have to be pretty efficient to go five, I would assume, to qualify for a win if he's a 75, maybe 80 pitch guy. Ideally, it's a great matchup if he were to go five plus, where he would have Pittsburgh and Miami on the back end. So, Johnny Cueto, your boy Johnny Q, or Jesus Lizardo with a one start, where would you go?
Oh, I mean, it just depends if I needed an extra pitcher for my lineup or Lizardo. I think most people listening, I should hope, because we talk about two-start sleepers a lot. We talk about short-term pickups a lot. But kind of my philosophical standpoint of this is you should not need to turn to those very often. That should be if things have gone wrong and your actual A lineup is, you know, kind of crumbling, and you need to repair it somehow. That's what these recommendations are for. So, you know, most people, I should hope, have good enough pitchers that they don't have to rely on Johnny Cueto coming back from Tommy John surgery. I mean, the fact he's my preferred two-start sleeper says something about the quality of pitching on waiver wire right now.
Yeah, the state
and,
of pitching.
You know, furthering the risk, I mentioned I'm not sure if Logan Webb is making a single start this week. Well, if he is, then Johnny Cueto becomes just a one-star pitcher.
Even worse. So. Yeah, that's a good point. Who else are you adding? Let's get right into that. We're going to talk about lots of hitters, lots of pitchers to add, everything that went out over the weekend. Let's start with pitchers since we're on that subject with guys like Lizardo and Johnny Cueto. Who else are we adding as we are stepping out from the last episode where we had a lot of two starts here? So Scott White's preferred adds for this week. Pitching.
So pitching-wise, we talked about, I mean, Cueto was number one, I guess. I'm getting a little more, I'm feeling a little better about Alex Young these days. He had the most impressive start I think he's had so far. Not that there have been many bad ones, but on Saturday he went 8 innings, 2 hits, 12 strikeouts, 20 swinging strikes. Both of those obviously great numbers. And the 20 swinging strikes were divided pretty evenly between four pitches, 5 on the cutter, 7 on the changeup, 8 on the curveball, 11 on the fastball. What's interesting is for the season, he has a swinging strike rate now just behind Clayton Kershaw, and yet only 7.8 K per 9. That those two numbers don't seem to jibe. There was also a note about how he's working on keeping his shoulder closed to get better deception. That's a recent thing he's been working on, and obviously he follows it up with a start like this. So, I mean, I've been pretty dismissive of him because the minor league numbers were bad, 25-year-old rookie. But we're talking about 13 appearances now, and it seems like the results are getting better rather than worse. So I don't know. I mean, his next matchup, it's only a one-start week, obviously. It's against the Mets. It's, you know, kind of a middle-of-the-road matchup. But there aren't great options on the waiver wire, and I think he's looking like one of the better ones.
What if I pit it against? I've got some fringy starters here, guys that are all around the same-ish percent owned, and Alex Young is one of those. You jumped right to it where he went 8, struck out 12, 5 or less strikeouts in his previous 5 starts, which is maybe a little bit concerning. But what if we paired him up against Dylan Cease, who went 3 1/3, 1 earned run, 5 walks, and 4 strikeouts. He's given up 13 earned runs now in his last couple starts. My guy, Sandy Alcantara, 46% owned, complete game, 9 innings, 8 strikeouts, no earned runs. This was on Sunday. 5 of last 6 have gone 7 or more, plus he's had 7 or more strikeouts in his last 4. I believe he has San Francisco coming up next. And how about I'll throw out 2 other guys. Tony Gonsolin, who's 36% owned, he's only gotten to the 6th inning once since July 30th, and his next start is 6 days from now. I believe it's against the Mets here. And Adam Plutko, 41% owned. The Angels are up next. 6 innings, 2 earned runs, 5 strikeouts in his last start. So Alcantara, Cease, Young, Gonsolin, and Plutko. How would you sort that out? Who's your top 2?
I think Young would be my number 1. Actually, because Gonsolin, I want to like him, but he seems to have the innings issue where the Dodgers just don't. I don't think I think I saw a stat where they haven't had a starting pitcher go 6 innings since mid-August. And so obviously he's a part of that. So I'll go Cease number 1, Gonsolin. I'm sorry, Young number 1, Gonsolin number 2. And I think I would go Alcantara 3. I might go Alcantara 1 if he pitched for just about anyone else.
Come on. I'm like, let's go. I'm like, relent. Give me Alcantara.
Pumping your fist there. Yeah, he's getting better. This is this complete game with 8 strikeouts. That's now 7 plus strikeouts in 4 straight.
Yep.
I mean, that's his biggest issue right there.
And he's gone 7 in 5 of his last 6.
Yeah, well, he's been efficient. And past 12 starts a 2.77 ERA. Now, he has only 1 win, and that was today during that stretch. And that's the problem with
details
for the Marlins. And unless you play in a league that doesn't award win, you know, that doesn't, wins don't matter.
Which a lot do now.
Wins matter very much. Pretty much every league I've ever played in. I'd go Young, Gonsolin, Alcantara. And obviously I should preface that Dylan Cease is still the highest upside of this group. And if it was like a dynasty scenario, he'd still be number one for me. I just don't have any faith in him rest of this season.
Well, number one as far as ownership, not like throwing out there.
Right. Of course.
Just making sure. Let's talk about a few hitters here. Hitters to add. I've got a couple names for you, and then I'll get a few of yours, and we're going to take a quick break here. Here were a few hitters that had an interesting weekend. How about Will Myers, who's 51% owned right now? He was 3-for-5 on Sunday. It was his second straight three-hit game, and he's on a 7-game hit streak. Will Myers just, you know, thrown out to the dogs. We've forgotten about him. Our guy, Kyle Tucker, who's 54% owned, he went 2-for-5 with 3 RBIs, 2 doubles on Sunday, 4-game hit streak. Essentially, while Springer was out, Springer returned on Sunday. Luckily, Tucker still got the start. He was in left, then moved to first. Just a couple notes there for Tucker. Asdrubal Cabrera, great game on Sunday, 4-for-5 with 3 RBIs. He's got a 5-game hit streak and 2 homers and 5 RBIs in his last 5 games. And then Anthony Santander, 51% on a 12-game hit streak. That was cut on Sunday, but he hit his 18th homer on Friday. So Myers, Tucker, Cabrera, Santander, who are the two, or like really who sits at the top as far as ad that you have to have?
Tucker and Santander are the only two I'm that invested in unless there's a real need there. Will Myers, I believe now he's started 3 straight, but the playing time was very sporadic before then. Yeah, I'm not confident in it just because he started 3 in a row.
You don't think like the multi hit games and the 7-game hit streak that Will Myers has got is going to buy him some extra time on this run this week?
Well, either the 7 games were spaced out or it was a lot of coming off the bench because he had sat out 3 games in a row prior to the 3 he started. He hadn't started 3 games in a row prior to the 3 he started. So, I mean, that's not good.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just, like I said, I just pulled up. Those are the last 7 games that he had played in. He's got hits in. So, yeah, I mean, it's a fair point. It's just as of recent, the multi-hits are kind of piling up. Is he a guy that can buy himself more time? You're not on the buy category, which I think is fine.
I don't want to assume that going into the week.
But you still like Tucker. You like Tucker and Santander over. It's just Will Myers with the speed possibility on a week. I mean, you can play the stuff here with head to head and like daily transactions. But weekly guys, there's a pretty big clear cut advantage you could have if Will Myers does get those starts and he does pile up any type of stolen bases that you're not going to get from Santander. I guess I'm not really trying to make the case for Will Myers. I can't imagine, you know, he's the guy I go down the ship with, but he just has been good as of recent, where I think there's still some question marks with Kyle Tucker. Santander actually might be the most consistent of all of them, though.
Yeah, Santander, I would have no objection starting him anywhere, even though he's only 51% owned. He seems very steady, and there isn't a lot bad to say about him. Tucker, it's kind of a Luzardo situation where I don't know exactly what the playing time's going to look like, but I feel like everybody who hasn't picked him up yet, the leagues where he isn't owned, everybody's keeping a very close eye on him, and it was certainly interesting that he got to start again, even though Springer was back in the lineup. No guarantees there, obviously. He, you know, the one left-hander they faced, even when Springer was out, Tucker sat. So it may be a lefty-righty thing for him, or even less than that. I don't know. But I don't think there are any more assurances for Will Myers' playing time, and I think Tucker is the... If neither of them are especially usable right now, Tucker's the trendier name, and I think the more dangerous pickup right now.
Yeah, and I feel comfortable, too, that, you know, Springer is able to come back and they kept Tucker in the lineup. They moved him around. He played well in the time off that Springer had. So those are all really, really good pluses going into this week. You just have to hope that Tucker keeps rocking. Let's hit a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get Scott's hitters to add this week. We've got a bunch of injuries, news and notes, and believe me, everything else that's going to prep you for the week coming up here. So don't go anywhere. Quick break here on Fantasy Baseball Today.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
All right, Scott, who do you got? Who are you adding? You're not excited about Will Myers. You're not excited about Asdrubal Cabrera. You like Santander. You like Kyle Tucker. But who else are we adding for this coming week?
There are a couple of hitters who, they're kind of platoon roles. Eric Thames has been in platoon role all year. Mike Yastrzemski has kind of recently started sitting against lefties, but both have righty loaded schedules, both have very favorable matchups. They've both been crushing it in the second half. And I think Yastrzemski and Thames are good 1 week options. And in a shallower league, Ryan McMahon's worth pointing out. He's at home all week. Those are the times to start him, a 9-11 OPS at home. And it's been very consistent delivering there recently, especially. He's been one of the most predictable streamer type hitters out there, to the point that he's not that widely available anymore, but he might be out there. Brett Gardner, I love the Yankees matchups this week. He's like just below the threshold of, his numbers are so good that he has to be owned, which means, you know, a week like this one with favorable matchups, that's the right time to pick him up and use him. A deep option who's starting to get my attention is Matt Joyce of the Braves. I think he's only like 8% owned, but he is, you know, with the injuries to Markakis and Enciarte, Joyce has been playing against virtually every right-hander the Braves face. He homered for a second straight day today. His OBP on the year is over 400. He's pretty usable, I think, when they're facing a righty.
I like good old OBP Matt Joyce. All right, I got a couple other fringy hitters for you. Three that are in the 35 to 45% owned range, and luckily you didn't bring any of them up. Our good old Jason Joe Kipnis, 35%. He went 3-for-4 on Sunday. Two of his four previous games, he had no hits. 2-for-4 in his previous game. That's what it was. And no hits in the previous five games. So the last couple good. He had a bad stretch there. Avisel Garcia, who's a little bit more owned than Kipnis, was 3-for-4, hit his 19th homer on a five-game hitting streak, and he's got all road games next week out of Tampa Bay. And Robinson Cano, who is 5-for-11 since returning with two home runs, 43% owned here. So Kipnis, Garcia, Cano, there can only be one, Highlander. Who do you pick?
If I have to pick one, I'm going to pick my boy Kipnis.
Still the least owned of all of them, not even over Cano?
Just because he's the least owned doesn't mean he should be. He also has, I think, the best matchups for the three. Although, obviously, Al Garcia's are pretty good, too. It's probably pretty close between him and Kipnis. So I guess it depends if you need the infielder or outfielder more. Looking up his home away splits, Garcia's actually been much better at home this year. I don't know if that's just one of those fluky things that happens with splits sometimes, because obviously Tampa's not known as a favorable place to hit. But that's interesting. I'm not saying you can't pick up Cano. I don't think it's a huge gap between him and Kipnis in terms of who I prefer, but Kipnis has been, he's been on a nice productive run for a couple months now versus Cano, who's done it for like a week.
I got a couple middle infielders for you then, since you're not into Cano. You're into Kipnis. Maybe one of these two guys might push Kipnis at all here, but these are teammates. And we have spent a lot of time talking about them, but it's fun because the Rangers can't quit Rugi Odor. Scott White can quit Odor, but the Rangers cannot. So I want to pitch you up Odor versus Solak, because Mr. Nick Solak has been rocking. Only 20% owned, though. He was 3-for-4 with four RBIs in his last game, six RBIs in his last four. And we've got Odor, who's on a three straight multi-hit game run here. 2-for-5 Sunday with his 24th homer, his second straight home run. And he is about 30% more owned than Solak here. So Odor versus Solak, Who is your choice, and could either of them pass Kipnis?
I think Solak could, so he's my choice. And it's fortunately he and Odor aren't competing for playing time with the Rangers. They're both playing every day, even though the Rangers suggested Odor wouldn't be. He managed to get hot, 3 home runs, 3 doubles in his past 5 games. I mean, obviously Odor's had these fakeouts in the past, over the past couple years. I obviously regret in my 2014 Dynasty League dropping him for Austin Adams, especially since I'm seeing he scored 32 points for me in what was his last week with my team.
Ooh.
Now my best hope there is Ty France. So that may be the decision that cost me the championship if Odor stays hot, but that's a very, very big if, and I'm certainly not counting on it. I would take any of these middle infield options we've discussed over him, but clearly he's not. Well, it's not clear, but he showed us he isn't done. Maybe he's done now, but he wasn't done. He had at least one more week in him.
Do you see 51% owned as over ownage on Odor? I mean, because he's really difficult to deal with.
And I'm sure that's just a remnant from early season stuff. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I assume if he started the year at zero, he would be at, 10% now or something like that.
Less than Solak. Okay. I mean, it's just interesting to go look at those things because people don't want to cut the name. But a guy like Nick Solak, I picked him up in actually both of the playoff runs that I'm working with right now. He was just an unowned player, and Nick Solak has been fantastic for me. I've got a super, super deep guy if there's any interest. Obviously, it's going to be relatively situational, but Ryan McBroom, who's 1% owned, is hitting 375 coming into Sunday, or he was hitting 375 coming into Sunday, 6-for-16 with 4 RBIs in that previous run. Is McBroom a Seth Brown type pickup? You know, deep leagues, you're just looking for a little bit of run. He's getting at bats right now. Is there any interest whatsoever? Does 1% seem super unowned or new?
Brown is a good comparison because they're both 27 and they both weren't that notable for their production in the minors until this year. This is what McBroom was doing at AAA this year, 315 with a 976 OPS. You know, it's PCL, and the numbers there are crazy with the juiced ball. So you got to take his production with a grain of salt. He is much like Brown, it seems, just playing against right-handed pitchers. That seems like a reasonable parallel, I think.
Would you drop Brown for McBroom since he's on a little bit of a run?
If I just wanted a hitter and didn't care about what position he played, probably not. If I needed a corner infielder, well, I guess Brown's a corner infielder too, right? He's eligible at first base, at least in CBS leagues. All he's played in the majors so far is outfield. I have a preference for Brown. He did have a 30 homer season prior to this one. He has at least gotten a couple starts against the lefty, I think, but it's pretty close. I know people just want to hear the strong opinion, but if you have a stronger one than I do, I wouldn't fault you for taking McBroom over Brown.
We could just make them the same player. He could be McBrown.
That works.
McBrown. They're just the same guy. All right. Let's look good over at some injuries, news, and notes. Mike Trout, he was scratched from the lineup, the Angels lineup on Sunday. He had been set to return from a 1-game absence. He had a sore toe, but it wasn't good to go. That did not quite help me in a league where I had him going and I got the notification he's good to go, and then it was like, nope, he's now back to day to day. So that is a little bit unfortunate. X-rays on the injured right hand of Bryce Harper came back negative on Friday. Harper had admitted that he was unable to grip the bat after he was drilled by Steven Matz. It was a fastball and he didn't play over the weekend. So there's nothing you can do about any of those guys. I fully expect both of them to be back this week, and I'm only really talking to weekly lineup guys right now, especially Mike Trout. I think Trout will be back in right away. Harper could be a little bit of a concern with the grip bat stuff. Do you look at something like that, just really quickly on Harper, do you look at him, where his performance has been at, an inability to maybe fully grip the bat, And if you had viable options, and let me throw this viable option at you. What if you had a guy like Ramon Laureano, who, by the way, like came off the IL, went back, or he got hurt. He was out Saturday, didn't play on Sunday. If you had a Laureano and you felt okay, would you pop Harper on the bench in a weekly type of lineup for a player of the caliber of Laureano, thinking if he can't grip the bat, maybe there's going to be a power issue when he comes back during the week? Or is that just too tinkery and too ridiculous?
Well, you opened up a new can of worms with Laureano, who has, like you said, is dealing with his own issue, leg issue. Sounds like just a cramp, so he'll probably be okay. But I don't know that I would consider him especially safer than Harper. Was he back in the lineup today? I guess it's possible he was. Let me double check that. But okay, just to answer the broad question, I don't see how you could possibly sit Trout. We don't have a clear timetable for him, but he's Mike freaking Trout.
Well, I meant Harper. Trout is a...
I know.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I just wanted to, back up what you were saying there.
Yeah.
And then in terms of Harper, like, I don't feel like Harper... He's been much better in the second half, but I don't feel like for the season he's been that much better than the generic starting outfielder in a three outfielder 12-team league, you know? So Laureano could be somebody like... I don't want to name somebody too high-end, but I'm thinking about my own teams in this league and some of the outfield decisions I had to make. Like, there were times I couldn't start Jorge Soler. There were times I couldn't start Tommy Pham or Trey Mancini.
Mancini's
sure
an interesting one.
In a five outfielder league is thinking those are obviously must-starts, but in a three outfielder league, you just might have too many outfielders, and that makes sitting Harper an easy choice.
Yeah, and Mancini's a really interesting one, too, because that's the range of the type of guy where you're like, listen, I've got Harper, but if you're having issues gripping the bat, maybe he misses a couple games. How well is he going to be when he comes back? You worry about power zaps. You might just be better set going with a Trey Mancini and not getting, you know, taking a big L, yeah. Especially when you don't have all of the stuff. Like, I don't know if we're going to walk in by roster locks that you're going to have a clear, definitive idea what's going on with Harper. So, I mean, that would be an obvious case that you just put him on the bench and you cross your fingers that you have a viable option.
Yeah, if you have a strong alternative to Harper, because I don't think Harper is anything more right now than a strong starter in a mixed league, standard mixed league, then I think you play it safe and sit Harper. And Laureano was not in the lineup today, by the way. I think it was yesterday's game he was removed from with that leg issue.
Yeah.
Saturday, I should say.
It was Saturday. He came back Friday. Saturday, he was out. He didn't play Sunday, so we also have to watch that one. Yeah. Nelson Cruz, he remained out of the Twins lineup on Sunday. He had sat out two straight after feeling some soreness in his left wrist. That is the same thing that put him on the IL last month. Probably in the similar vein of everything we're talking about, though obviously performance-wise better than Harper. This is a little bit worrisome if you don't have an answer coming into Monday.
Yeah, it is worrisome. That is going to be a tough call. Because Cruz could hit you four home runs, five, probably not five, but he could have like a four homer week if he plays, and you'll feel terrible for sitting him. He's been super impressive this year. The reason we don't talk about him more as a high end pick next year is because he's in his late 30s and he's DH only. So it's kind of like the David Ortiz effect, where he was consistently pushed to a point lower than his production said it should be. And yet he delivered on it. But for this week, Cruz, I think it would really depend on who my alternatives were. If it was kind of a waiver wire scrub, I'd probably just stick with Cruz. But if it was somebody who I hated leaving on my bench in his own right, but I just didn't have room for him, well, this is your opportunity to get him in there and play it safe. And hopefully he's nearly as effective as Cruz would be.
There's a couple more of these guys that are going to put some tough decisions here in this week. I mean, even head-to-head, there's still decisions, because I think there's some head-to-head people out there. You know, if you're in a playoff run, if you were going to miss one of these guys for 60% of their starts during the week, even though they're great, maybe not like a Cruz, but there might be justifiable redraft reasons to drop them if there's options out there. And a couple of the guys that you might be staring at is a guy like Chris Bryant, who Joe Maddon said on Sunday that he wasn't in the lineup because his right knee is still, quote, still barking. He's been had some soreness in the knee, and he admitted that there was still more of it after Saturday's game. So there's a little bit of a question mark surrounding him. And then Max Kepler was removed from Sunday's game against the Indians after aggravating a upper chest injury. And both of those are a problem. And both of those are a problem walking into Monday. So again, this, it's kind of like a train of stuff we're talking about where there's tough decisions. And, you know, the guys that have performance-wise that have justified it are Cruz, Kepler, and Trout, where Bryant and Harper are probably serviceable options out there. But I don't know, man. I'm a little bit risk-averse with all of these guys.
Yeah. I think it's reasonable to be that way this time of year, especially not only because you're possibly in a win or go home scenario, playoff scenario, but also because the IL is basically dead with rosters expanded. And this is going to change next year because I believe rosters only expand to 28 players in September. So the IL will still be alive. But for this last year, there's not much value to putting a player on the 10-day IL. So, you know, normally teams might be quick to do that because it's only 10 days. But now they're just going to stay day to day, and they don't have to offer really any more clarity than that.
Yeah,
I would be as reluctant to start Kepler and Bryant as I am Cruz, which isn't to say it's an obvious sit, but you really have to weigh your options there.
Absolutely. Mitch Haniger looks like he may not be back this season. Kevin Kiermaier, he departed Sunday's game versus Blue Jays with some neck spasms. Addison Russell, he also left the game. He was hit in the head by a pitch. That's always a concern. Carlos Correa, he took batting practice on Sunday. He had been hitting in a cage without issue. He said he's feeling great and he is one step closer to returning, whatever that means. Whatever that means. So he's not a roster anything. Daily people can deal with that. Yankees activated Gio Urshela from the 10-day IL. That's very good. And after going 6 and striking out 10 on Friday, Michael Pineda was suspended for 60 games because of they said there's like a thing that was found in common blood pressure medication. So
yeah, masking agent is what I think that's he was suspended for rather than an actual PED, though. You know, particularly with that report recently from Jeff Passan about the gas station sexual enhancement pills. You know, I think that gives a lot more validity to the I ingested something that I didn't realize was a banned substance argument, which seemed to be why MLB was warning players that they could get a positive test if they were to take one of those pills. So, you know, it's the reason I'm going into all that is because Pineda finished this year on a heater. His last 11 starts, 2.76 ERA, 109 WHIP, 10.1 K per nine. I mean, he was looking like a must-start option, and suddenly it's all gone. And it's going to be interesting to see how he's valued next year based on that, because there aren't many. Obviously, the pitcher pool gets pretty thin before a draft ends. I mean, he probably should be drafted, I don't know, in the teens, the teen rounds, I would assume.
And somebody brought up a question last week to me where it was like, how do you approach suspended pitchers? This is before Pineda. And they were talking about Frankie Montas, who Frankie Montas was really solid. And it's an interesting take. But, you know, I mean, the teens is definitely the appropriate range. I mean, I don't know if you've got a guy that's going to be out for 40 games, but he was lights out. Let's say, you know, well, I mean, I don't know what the number is going to equate to, probably 40-ish games for next season. What are you going to do with a guy that put up,
right,
you know,
just sit him on your bench? And the fact it's Michael Pineda, and like, he's been pretty fringy over the years. So maybe teens is too optimistic. Maybe it's more like the early 20s just because of that stash factor. But I think he'll definitely be draftable, even factoring in him missing those 40 games. Frankie Montas, I'm actually very excited about last year, not to get too far on that tangent, because I was totally buying the breakout. And I mean, if you look at where he ranks among starting pitchers in per game scoring, he is right there with all of the aces. So you definitely don't want to let him fall too far next year.
He's one of those guys. All right, let's take a quick break right here on Fantasy Baseball Today. When we come back, lots more ads, some studs being studs. I got some deep pitchers I want to see if Scott's going to stream. And we've even got a few emails, so we'll see if we can get to them. So quick break right here on Fantasy Baseball Today.
Shopify's already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. That's right. Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. With Shopify POS, you can accept credit cards, mobile payments, and every other major payment method, all with low fees and transparent pricing, starting on day one. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/MLB podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/MLB podcast to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/MLB podcast.
Hello, everyone. It's Mike Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.
All right, I have got some lower-owned players, and it was almost like a section of like pitchers to add, but I wanted to throw this at you, pitchers to stream based on maybe one matchup. Here are the four. You tell me what you like. Anthony Kay, who was traded from the Mets to the Blue Jays, he came up and made his debut. Only 8% owned. He was 5 2/3 with 4 hits, 2 earned runs, 3 walks, and 8 strikeouts over the weekend. Drew Smyly, who's 11% owned, 7 innings, 0 earned runs, 6 Ks. It was his second straight 7-inning scoreless outing, and he'd only given up 1 earned run in his last 3. Dan Duffy, who I actually picked up in one of my leagues and started him, and I was incredibly nervous, 23% owned. He went 6, 1 earned run, 5 strikeouts against Miami. His previous start, he went 6 1/3 with 3 earned runs and 3 strikeouts against Baltimore. And then Tyler Beede, who went 5, no earned runs, 5 strikeouts against the Dodgers on Saturday. Beede's probably got the best matchups of the crew, Pittsburgh or Miami, where Duffy's got Houston, Smyly might have Atlanta or Boston. So talk to me about which pitcher you'd be comfortable streaming, Kay, Smyly, Duffy, or Beede.
Probably none of them.
Great
honestly.
Answer.
I mean, Smyly and Beede, they have a lot more bad than good. So I don't know. Yeah, that would take more courage than I have to roll with them just because they happen to be coming off a good start. Duffy, the fact he's faced in Houston, I mean, that wipes out whatever sleeper potential you'd find there.
Sure.
Anthony Kay, his first major league start, struck out 8 5 2/3 innings, and he's a prospect of some note, certainly. Came over in the Marcus Stroman deal, probably the biggest name that came over in the Marcus Stroman deal, right?
God, I'm trying to think. Yeah, it was definitely Cam. No, well, if you're a deep prospect person, Simeon Woods Richardson is the upside guy. He's the big okay. upside guy with low walks, high strikeouts, a little bit of command issues. But Kay was the one that everybody knows about. And obviously, as you see now, to the majors.
He had some big trouble after he got to AAA. Got a little better after switching from the Mets farm system to the Blue Jays. And he said that, you know, once he ran into trouble with the Mets, they kept trying to change what he was doing, and the Blue Jays let him go back to whatever works. And so, you know, that might partially explain it, but he still had a ton of walks at AAA with the Blue Jays, and 3 5 2/3 innings in this start. It was a fine major league debut, certainly, but I'm not ready to put much faith in him either.
So where did I know the answer was none of them, which is always a yep. great answer, but if there was one, if there could only be one, you've already eliminated Duffy. You don't feel super confident about Kay. Smyly or Beede? I mean, Beede's got the best matchup of any of them. Could you?
He's done it with a good matchup, yeah.
So would that be the pick if you had to, if you were desperate? Because this is desperation. These are guys that are under 25% owned. So maybe I should have prefaced that a little bit. These are desperation streams.
I feel like there's got to be better out there.
But if you're forcing me
to pick one of these four.
Yes,
I would pick Danny Duffy, actually, because
really
he's the only pitcher who I think is halfway decent. Oh. I mean, K could be, but obviously very unproven.
All right. Well, OK, then we're going to get right to it. Let's get to some better options. They're more owned, so they're probably still sitting out there for people. Fringy starting pitcher part one. Sean Manaea, 66% owned. Beautiful start. He's got Texas next. He went 7, struck out 10 with one earned run. Anthony Desclafani, who is 69% owned. 3 of his last 4 starts have been quality starts, but he's got Arizona coming up next. Hap, who, man, I sat this weekend. I was like, there's no way I'm putting Hap in my lineup. And he ended up being pretty solid against Boston. 6 1/3 with 7 strikeouts, no earned run. He's got 2 straight scoreless quality starts. Toronto looks like he's up next. And how about Chris Bassitt? Went 6, struck out 11 with 2 earned runs. Looks like it's Houston or Texas up next, but he hasn't given up more than 3 earned runs since July 24th. So those are more owned guys. You getting down with any of these?
I'm frustrated in myself for not bringing up Manaea when we talked about pitchers to add at the top of the show, because holy cow, this was an awesome start.
Amazing.
Against Texas. 7 hit innings, 2 hits, 10 strikeouts. That was after giving up 1 hit in 5 innings in his return from the IL. What's amazing about this start, 23 swinging strikes. Obviously, I mentioned he had 10 strikeouts. 23 swinging strikes, an incredible number, including 15 on the fastball, which averaged 89.8 miles per hour.
Wow.
He wasn't a hard thrower before either, but we talked about how, yeah, he was dominating on his rehab assignment in a very tough league to pitch in, the PCL. I mean, it might be tougher to pitch in than the majors, honestly, the kind of numbers pitchers have been putting up there. And Manaea was dominating it, even though his velocity's down. And this is 2 great starts in the majors in a row. His catcher, Josh Fegley, said, "I've never seen anybody throw a fastball like his. The delivery makes it deceptively fast," according to Fegley. And, I mean, there's a lot of data now supporting the idea that Manaea is really good, perhaps better than ever.
Interestingly, on CBS, he was the second most added pitcher over this last week. It went from 51 to 67% owned. Jordan Lyles is above him, but and the reason I'm bringing this up is you've got a couple pitchers like Lyles and John Means who are right in the same territory who are 2-start mm-hmm. pitchers. So those are the guys what they're added. So, I mean, would you take a 1 Manaea over a 2 Lyles or Means or something like that? Because you're right, Manaea is moving into a territory above the class that he's being labeled with as far as ownership.
So it looks like Manaea's next start is against the Rangers again. So that, you know, that could be good news or bad news. I prefer, you know, that's better than like facing Houston, though, who the A's are facing at the start of the week. Yeah, I don't feel good enough about Lyles as a 2-start option to pass up what I think might actually be a good pitcher instead, even if it's for 1 start. And certainly if you're talking about a bench situation, a guy to just pick up and fill a bench spot, then that makes it easily Manaea because he'll be, you know, he has a chance of maybe getting a 2-start week down the line. You mentioned Means too. It looks like John Means has lost his 2-start status that he had on Friday. So
it's kind of hurt a lot of the people picking him up because he was like the 5th most picked up player on CBS.
Yeah. And Ty Blatch. It's Blatch, right? What am I asking you?
I thought
for?
It was, yeah. Wow. I mean,
block. It's
that,
block.
I was about
block.
To. I was about to correct you. That was maybe the most insulting thing you've said to me yet. So, wow. I appreciate that. But yeah, it is block.
Well, you've been self-deprecating about it. So I was just following your lead.
Yeah. Well, you were. So, all right. Well, keep going. Anything else on Manaea or the 2 starts? And if Manaea is in a category of his own, Desclafani, Hap, or Bassitt, do any of them get preferential treatment as far as ads go?
I would say Hap I don't want. Desclafani I've kind of put in that rare boring class of pitcher that I mean in the most positive way in 2019 where everybody stinks. Boring is good. Desclafani is firmly there. I think it's time to put Bassitt in that category too, even though I like the skills less for him than Desclafani. I mean, we're talking about, for Bassitt now, we're talking about past 7 starts, 2.61 ERA, 1.19 WHIP, 8.5 Ks per 9. It's pretty good. He's doing Julio Teheran-like things. Don't totally buy it, but it's been going on long enough that can't just dismiss it either.
All right, fringy starting pitchers part two. These are much less owned than the guys that we just talked about. And these are very two polarizingly different names here. Mike Leake, who's 55% owned, went 6 1/3, gave up 2 earned runs, walked 3 with 1 strikeout. That is just his MO, but efficient, if you will, with the Arizona Diamondbacks, who are the hottest team in baseball right now, just finally losing on Sunday. They lost to the Reds. He has got the Cincinnati Reds up next week versus Brendan McKay, who came back up 51% owned, but he only went 3 2/3 of an inning, gave up 1 hit, struck out 7. He struck out 7 of 12 batters, and it looks like he's primed to go against the Angels, but doesn't have a lot of innings under him, so wins would come by. Wins are not a premium to him. So Leake, McKay, any of those guys, as far as what we've been talking about, there's got to be better options. Are Leake and McKay a better option?
I don't think so. Leake's been way too polar with his outcomes, and the bad starts have been oh so bad. Still has an ERA over 6 with the Diamondback. And McKay, I mean, kind of the same thing for him, frankly. And then you add the innings concern where he's already set a career high, and as well as he was pitching, obviously the Rays weren't willing to push him very far. So yeah, I don't trust him to make enough of an impact, even if he is good.
Some studs being studs from the weekend. Gerrit Cole, absolutely phenomenal. Went 8, gave up 1 hit, 1 earned run, I believe it was, 0 walks, and 15 strikeouts. 15 strikeouts. And I pulled this. I'm trying to pull this up here. Who sent this? This was Jason Catania, said that birthday boy, apparently, Gerrit Cole whiffed 15 without a walk in another dominant start. That is his 6th game with 10 plus Ks and 0 walks in 2019, tying a single season major league record also achieved by Clayton Kershaw in 2016, Randy Johnson in 2004, and Curt Schilling in 2002. Hello, top billing in 2020 for Gerrit Cole. Ridiculous, with his 5 straight games, by the way, of double-digit strikeouts. Those last 5, by the way, 65 strikeouts in that time. Kidding.
3 straight with 14 plus.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
He's ridiculous. He's amazing.
I mean, you could make a case for him, I think, very easily for number one pitcher next year. Unless he does, you know, if he signs with Texas or something, that's going to be harder to do. But
yeah, he'll be an
angel.
He
signs at a normal pitching environment. Definitely in the running. I think Max Scherzer, his start today, 9 strikeouts and 6 innings, look like Scherzer of old. If that's how he finishes, it'll be hard for me to pass him up at number one. Obviously, Verlander's been the best pitcher in fantasy this year. He'll be 37 next year, so he'll be in the running too. But Cole is right there. I think it's a clear top 3. Inning for inning, I think Cole maybe has surpassed those two, at least in my mind. I know some of the stats would say otherwise, but you know, the things I value the most, I think he might be better than those two inning for inning. It's just those two, you know, they're more like 7 and 8 innings at the time, while Cole is like 6 and 7 innings at a time.
Jack Flaherty went 8, struck out 10, giving up no earned runs with 1 walk. It was his 2nd straight with 8 innings. Milwaukee looks like he's up next. Mike Clevinger went 6 1/3 with 7 strikeouts, 2 earned runs. Now, this one's an interesting one. Yu Darvish went 5, no earned runs, walked 1. He only has 3 walks in his last 3 starts, and we know the whole streak. He had 7 strikeouts. San Diego or Pittsburgh, I'm not sure which one it is, but I took Yu Darvish in the too early mock, and he was my 2nd pitcher, Scott, and I got him in like the 9th round in a 15-man. I felt like there was a deal that people don't want to believe on Yu Darvish, but outside of that one stinker, he has just been phenomenal in half of a season so far.
Yeah, I feel like I saw another mock where he went quite a bit earlier than that. So, you know, obviously when you're talking about where a player goes, you're dealing with very limited mock draft info right now. And I always wonder with these early mock drafts just how invested everybody is. Like, you have certain people who take it seriously and really thought through the rankings already, and then you have those guys who just probably like, yeah, I'll do it. And
sure,
they're just kind of going top of mind. And, oh, I totally forgot.
What's
about
the site
it.
Have at the top? I'll take that guy. That's the guy. Yeah, that I'll take. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I felt like it was a deal. It was something that people hadn't adjusted with Yu Darvish, and he continues just to be really, really good.
Yeah.
A couple more. Charlie Morton, he struck out 10 in 6 innings, 3 earned runs. And Caleb Smith went 6, struck out 8 with no earned runs. And I believe he has Milwaukee up next here. So those are some studs being studs. How about studs being duds, though? John Lester, 5 1/3, gave up 8 earned runs, 3 walks, 7 strikeouts. Noah Syndergaard, not as duddish, but 5, gave up 4, struck out 5. And Marcus Stroman, 4 innings, 10 hits, 4 earned runs, 6 strikeouts, but 3 of his last 4 starts, he's had 4 earned runs. Also, 3 of his last 5, he hasn't made it to the 5th inning here. So Syndergaard and Stroman potentially, I believe Syndergaard is locked into Arizona up next. Stroman might have Arizona or the Dodgers, and John Lester has Pittsburgh. I ask you, are you worried about starting any of these guys this coming week?
Not Syndergaard. I think since picking up the slider pretty much at the start of the second half, he's had a few hiccups. Every pitcher has a few hiccups, but for the most part, he's been dominant. He's back to being an ace level pitcher. I don't have any concerns about starting him. The other two, I think in terms of skills, they're definitely behind Syndergaard. Lester may be running out of steam. He's pretty difficult to trust right now. Pittsburgh's a good matchup, but I would only use him if I was really having trouble finding another option.
I'd be concerned about Stroman.
And I prefer probably him. I prefer Lester probably to most of the waiver wire options out there. But, you know, it's still not ideal to have to start him. Stroman, he's clearly in a slump. He's had one quality start since joining the Mets. Even at his best, I think he's less than ace caliber. So I think it's another situation where I would prefer to sit him, especially since the matchup's not so favorable. You know, that might be a case where I pick up a one-start Manaea and start him over Stroman. Or
I would do that 100%.
Stroman for a two-start Cueto, I don't know that I'd go that far. Which tells you where we are with two-start streamers, because I called Cueto the best, who's widely available.
That's a very good point. Someone that's really interesting between stud and dud, Tyler Glasnow. He's back, 2 innings, 2 earned runs, 2 walks, 5 strikeouts, only made it 41 pitches into the game. Looks like he's got the Angels up next. I view Glasnow in the Brendan McKay category of, and I was saying this a couple weeks ago, why I had zero interest in Glasnow, because I just don't think he's going to make it into the range of qualifying for a win unless they actually utilize him in like opener situations where he's the second guy to come in. So I don't have interest in Glasnow. You agree?
I think so. I could see picking him up as a defensive measure, kind of like I was saying with Luzardo, but I would prefer Luzardo in that case because he already is stretched out. And if they are willing to let him start, you would expect him to go the length of a starter. Glasnow is kind of going to be used more like a long reliever. I assume he'll have a pretty good chance of going like 3 innings next time out, but he's not going to get to the 5-6 inning range, I think, in time to make a real impact for your fantasy team.
Unless he's crazy efficient. Over to the bullpen, just a couple notes. Oliver Drake, who's 0% owned, got his second save of the year on Saturday. He went 1 inning with 3 strikeouts, and there's just this ultimate question that's always following with this team. I don't know if there's really any interest in there. I'm going to just throw out a couple if there's anything you want to drop in here. Edwin Diaz is just baffling to me. On Friday, he went 1 inning, gave up 2 earned runs, 3 strikeouts. I believe he has 2 straight blown saves. And then you look at a guy like Shane Green, who got a save on Friday. I started the speculation. And then on Saturday, he got hit up in 1 inning for 2 earned runs. Diaz, Green, Drake, are there any comments? I mean, I think Edwin Diaz is just writing his story, which he is just plummeting in the mock I'm doing right now. Shane Green, I thought, was a speculative ad. Doesn't look like it. Melanson came in and got his 10th save. So Green, Diaz, Drake, any comments or any other bullpen things you want to throw out?
A couple of follow-ups here. Edwin Diaz, of course, has blown his last 2 save chances. He bounced back with a great performance in the 8th inning today. Struck out 2 in a perfect inning of work. Jerry's followed him. It was a losing... Jerry's Familia followed him. It was a losing effort. So, you know, it's not like they were... It's not like they were anticipating a save chance for anyone else. I don't know exactly where he stands for saves, but he did have a nice inning today. And Mark Melanson also bounced back with a save Sunday after Shane Green got it Friday. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's what I said. Yeah,
I'm getting my days mixed up.
No, he...
Melanson, Shane Green went on Friday, got the save then after Melanson threw 28 pitches in a bad outing on Thursday, right?
Yeah.
Melanson bounced back and got the save Saturday. So I think his job's secure.
Okay. Let's see. We're going to get like just two emails in here real quick. James in the DC says, hi, Scott and Chris. What is your favorite feeling in a baseball league? By the way, you guys, just like James, can email us at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. I was about to forget that. What is your favorite feeling in a baseball league? My nomination in a keeper league, I traded away all my high priced players like Sale and Freeman and Ramirez and I don't know what feels good about that, man. When it became apparent I would not be winning a championship this year. However, I was able to sneak into the playoffs, and coming into Sunday, I have an unlikely chance to upset the number one seed. Please, please describe a better feeling.
Do you having your cake and eating it too.
I had that one time and I still talk about it. I traded off everything. I squeaked in the playoffs. I made it to the championship. I didn't win, but I made some money on a chop. So that was an amazing feeling for sure.
That is a great feeling. That's a great feeling. I'm trying to think of a better one than that. I mean, it's always a great feeling when, and I guess maybe the average player doesn't have this, obviously, but when a guy you've been touting really heavily.
Ooh, good call.
You know.
Yeah.
Immediately delivers. Like, I remember Rhys Hoskins a couple years ago when he got called up in August after I'd been featuring him in my prospects report. And he wasn't, you know, considered a particularly high-end prospect, but I was pushing him very heavily, and he comes up and is just a monster to close out the season. So
that's
that was
a great one for guys like you and I as like prospect people. When you hit on that prospect that everybody else, like this year, I mean, I could be wrong, and you know, I'm not trying to tout crazy, but like everybody was down on Luis Robert. I was not. And I was trying to defend like, hey, let's, you know, we're good. Let's not get crazy where people are trying to drop Robert. And he's had one of the, I mean, just one of the more incredible minor league seasons. So that's like one that feels really good.
Maybe number one.
Yeah.
But in terms of something people can relate to, that's a really good one. You made. I think maybe another great feeling is when you pick up somebody who you just need a fill in and you regard him as a total scrub. And he ends up having a great week that week you picked him up.
That's a great call. Like you pick him up on Sunday for your playoff run to move on and he hits two homers or something like that. That's a good one. Robert asks, really need your help in making a decision. I play in a 12-team categories league. I'm entering the playoffs and everyone is stacked on pitching. He says, I've got Cueto coming off the IL. He said DL, but it's IL, buddy. And I need to get rid of an extra hitter. Who would you drop? Chris Davis with the A's. Adam Eaton. It says Greg Lux, Gavin Lux, or Gene Segura. What do you think? Davis, Eaton, Lux, or Segura? Who would you drop
Joe
for
Lux.
Cueto?
I dropped Chris Davis a long time ago.
Agreed. I'm very over him. So Chris Davis, that's an easy one. All right, last one here. This is this another Robert? Everyone's name is Robert today. Robert from London. Dear Frank, JT, Mark, and Cody, I'm miraculously in the semifinals of my head-to-head categories league that uses OBP instead of average, and I need another miracle against the number one team. A lot of underdogs today. I appreciate that. Lineup dilemma for the week. Which three guys for two outfield and one utility spots would you play? Hoskins, Tommy Edman, Will Myers, Colton Wong, and Jock Peterson. And he notes that he thinks there's great matchups for Edman, Wong, and Myers. So what do you think? You got to pick three of those guys, Hoskins, Edman, Myers, Wong, and Peterson to start for this week.
Okay, so OBP instead of average, I think that makes Hoskins an easy call.
No brainer. Agreed. I also would say maybe Jock Peterson. It makes him a lot more palatable.
Let me see how many lefties they're facing. I don't have that pulled up, but I'll get that pulled up real quick. And then another one, you need it. Okay, so it could be any position.
Yeah, any of these guys.
I would say Colton Wong. I mean, he's in my top 10 sleeper hitters for this week. The others are just so low end. I mean, Will Myers, we talked about, we don't know how much he's playing, and Tommy Edman is, you know,
I'd rather have
Colton Wong. He's been very hot.
Yeah, and I'm going to agree here as well, even though I was trying to make a little bit of a case, at least in conversation about Will Myers. I appreciate Tommy Edman, but I'd go Wong, Peterson, and Hoskins here. Do you have that last note on Peterson that you wanted to rock?
Yeah, so the Dodgers are facing two lefties in their six games.
Enough to put Will Myers or Edman in?
Yeah, I think I'd stick with Peterson. Those are some pretty low-end alternatives, I feel like.
Yeah, and both guys that might not necessarily be in the lineup as well to miss games. So, all right, very good. You guys can send those questions in, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Send those emails in for you this week. I believe we are back with you on Wednesday, so make sure you guys are tuned in here. You can follow me on Twitter at @isitthewelsh. You can follow Scott on Twitter at @CBSScottWhite. Let's rock these playoffs, guys. Send in those questions. We're going to help you win these championships, and we're going to help all those underdogs beat the top billing guys. So until then, we will catch you next time right here on Fantasy Baseball Today.